I thought it would be kind of cool and unique to bring someone on to speak specifically about travel, and even more specific about how travel can help shape us as individuals.
When everybody else was coming back home after law school, I had the opportunity to go spend a year and some change in China. So I ended up doing that before I actually came back to the Bahamas to get called to the bar. You don't just grow your knowledge base from only the things and the people around you. Mm-hmm. You have to go elsewhere in search of that.
Out of curiosity, who do you support?
This could go left real quick.
Well, you be careful with what
Valley
you say.
Boy, okay, all the way.
Okay, there we
sir.
Go. All right. Just check it. Whew. Just check it. I love it.
I was about to shout cut and walk out the door.
If you're an avid traveler, are you an avid traveler if you haven't lost your passport at least once?
Nah, I think that's a part of the eligibility criteria.
Like you got that's almost like the tax you got to pay to get in. You know, in order for you to learn and develop as an individual, you need to expose yourself to a lot more things than you would in the city, communities, or the country that you were born in. Welcome to the new episode of the Miles High Podcast. This is Miles Monroe Jr., your host. As always, the goal of this podcast is to entertain, educate, and elevate you miles high above your fears, your doubts, and any limitations that you may think exist, always knowing that your limitations only exist in your mind. All right. I got a great pod today. Got a guest on the pod, first-time guest, but someone who shares a similar love that I have, and that's what we're going to talk about today. So without any further ado, I want to introduce to the pod Mr. Nicholas Mitchell, better known as Nick International.
Rousing introduction. Thanks, bro. Thanks for
welcome,
having me.
Welcome to the pod. Welcome to the pod. So this is a special pod, man. I think you and I share a love of travel. I should say the first time I knew about your love of travel was when you were on a, I think you were doing some event or seminar or talking piece with
The Travel Symposium.
Travel Symposium. It was with my wife was on the same, my now wife was on the same panel as you were.
And you guys
were discussing many things that had to do with travel. So I got to know you, learned about you at that point. And then, you know, we see each other in the gym every now and again and kind of discuss having a conversation about travels. And I thought it would be kind of cool and unique to bring someone on to speak specifically about travel and even more specific about how travel can help shape us as individuals, right? But before we get into that, I want you to give us a bit of an introduction to yourself, you know, where you're from, your background, your educational background, professional background. Let's give a little introduction to the audience.
It's funny how the hardest thing to do is talk about yourself, right? So I guess I'm Nick. Professionally, I'm an attorney. But I like to label myself more as a man of the world. Mm-hmm. I dip and dabble in a few other things. I'm also VP of a travel company that specializes in getting people back and forth between the islands on charter flights. I operate in the restaurant space too, through the food and culture company. I'm the executive chef there, sort of the creative mind behind it. Mm-hmm. And in my spare time, as you very well know, I just travel as much as I possibly can, mm-hmm. To any and everywhere. I really don't, you know, destination discriminate. Yeah. That's really it.
Cool. So you said you're an executive chef?
Yes, executive chef.
So you're just a man of many talents.
I got a few.
You could cook.
I could cook, yeah.
Cook. You know, when you say it twice, that means it means a little more. Man, that's dope. I wouldn't call myself an executive chef, but I could throw down. You know, I pride myself on being able to make a unique meal or two. But that's dope, man. So tell me, so with your background in law, right? And well, but first, let's start. Like, where did you study? Where did you go to school?
Well, I did my law degree in the UK in a very quaint city named Canterbury, at a university called the University of Kent. Mm-hmm. Funny enough, a lot of Bahamians go there. I made some, you know, lifelong friendships there. Then I spent a year in London at the, it's now called the University of Law, but at the time it was called the College of Law. Mm-hmm. That was where I did my bar qualifications. And after that, I actually didn't immediately return home. I mean, to pivot straight into sort of a travel-based conversation, mm-hmm. when everybody else was coming back home after law school, I had the opportunity to go spend a year and some change in China. So I ended up doing that before I actually came back to the Bahamas to get called to the bar and all that.
And this was a professional opportunity or like leisurely, just spending time in China?
I don't know if I would label it as either. I really went there to study. Okay. That's where I picked up a little bit of Mandarin.
Okay.
Don't ask me.
I was about to say.
Don't put me on the spot. I can order some food so I know I won't starve and I know how to get around. But, you know, let's not get too complicated.
Got you.
Yeah.
That's dope, man. So where did the travel bug come from? Like where did it all start for you?
My mother. It's an interesting story. She was one of those parents who believed that, well, I say was, is, mm-hmm. one of those parents that believes that you don't just grow your knowledge base from only the things and the people around you. Mm-hmm. You have to go elsewhere in search of that to mm-hmm. try to find it, experience things. And
so she taught you that from like, what age were you?
Oh boy, I think the first trip I would count is like my first trip. I was about 10 years old.
Wow.
Went over to New York. Funny enough, I cried to come back home after I was there for like 2 days. It was weird traveling without your parents and, you know, having the flight attendants.
Yourself. Wow.
Yeah, having the flight attendants walk you around and all of that. That was kind of awkward. Uh-huh. But yeah, I would say since then, because although New York is a popular destination and one that's rather well known, it's a good way to, I think, dip your toe mm-hmm. into a multicultural ecosystem.
Absolutely.
Because that was sort of my first time seeing, you know, Indians, Jews, Muslims, mm-hmm. black people, white people, all these different, it's a real melting pot, sure, you know what I mean? Sure. Ethnicities, religions, races, what have you. And that's kind of always stuck with me. Mm-hmm. We would do a cruise in the summer, travel around the Caribbean, that kind of vibe. So I have a deep appreciation for our CARICOM neighbors and the similarities and differences mm-hmm. between our cultures. So mm-hmm. It bit me and it bit me hard.
Hard. Yeah. Gotcha. And you've been traveling ever since?
Ever since.
Man, that's amazing. And it's funny you say how your mother kind of taught you that, you know, in order for you to learn and develop as an individual, you need to expose yourself to a lot more things than you would in the city, communities, or the country that you were born in, right? The country that you grew up in. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I wanted to direct our conversation, because I feel like travel is a good agent of assisting in the development of us as human beings. I could remember myself, you know, going to high school here in the Bahamas, then going off to college and then realizing that, man, this world is a lot bigger than, you know, this 7 by 21 mile island that I grew up on, right? And mm-hmm. the people that I would have been around before I went off to college. And I just started to realize, man, the world is so big. There are so much more people to meet, things to do, cultures to experience. So I gained a true appreciation for travel and the exposure that it allowed us to get. So from an exposure standpoint, what was like the biggest or the first thing that really caught your eye in traveling that made you say like, wow, this isn't the Bahamas. Like where I'm at, what I'm experiencing is definitely not where I came from.
It was learning that in different countries, it's okay to have a different opinion from the people around you. Mm. I noticed that a lot of my, let's say, contemporaries in other jurisdictions that I'd visit were a little more open-minded. Mm. It sort of challenged my views on a lot of things that, you know, conceptually, if you're Bahamian and you don't get exposed to anything outside of the Bahamas, you will hold that as gospel. You know, that's your view set in stone.
Right.
It's like the Valley versus Saxons argument. You know what I mean? Very few people have any type of familial ties to either of those groups, but they have just they know that that's what Grammy was, and that's what their brother support or their daddy support or whoever it is. So that's what they are, and they just accept that.
Sure. So out of curiosity, who do you support?
this could go left real, real quick.
Well, but careful with
volley boy all
okay,
the way.
There we go. All right. Just check it. Whew. Just check it. I love it.
I was about to show cut and walk out the door.
Nah, I'm definitely a volley boy at heart, but for sure. All right, so that cool, man. Exposure. It brought a new, I guess it showed you the different perspectives that people have and broadened, I guess, your perspective in a sense. I have a few points that I want to highlight right before we continue talking, because in thinking about how travel can help us or assist us in shaping our identity and developing us as individuals, there were some points that I wanted to highlight, and you know, I wanted to get your, maybe not just your opinion, but some examples of these points, you know, in the travels that you've had over the years, right? The first, I think we discussed this already, the exposure to different cultures, right? It introduced you to diverse cultures, languages, and customs, right? That are different from where we are from. I could remember going to, I studied in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma. So going from, you know, Nassau, an island surrounded by water, going to Oklahoma, which is in the country land, with really, you know, not too much to do, right? It was a culture shock for me. And then going from Oklahoma, and then, you know, studying, doing my master's in New Jersey, New York area, the tri-state area, definitely a culture shock to me, right? Way faster, a lot more going on, a lot more to do. Fast pace, you know, it was, I realized that I preferred the city life more so than the island life. How did the culture or exposure to different cultures affect you or shape you from a personal standpoint?
That's a broad question. I hope you got plenty of time.
Yeah, man.
So exposure is a broad thing. It's one of the best things about travel. Mm. And the two words that you use, culture shock, I think is where it all sort of starts. Mm-hmm. And it's necessary. It's like jumping into cold water. You know what I mean? It feels terrible at first, but then after you get used to it and you get adjusted, mm-hmm. then everything's fine. I think I had the biggest culture shock of my life actually going to China. That was my first sort of, you know, experience with an Asian country. With that type of a language barrier, because it's not like going to Spain where mm-hmm. you could kind of see no bueno, mm-hmm. et cetera, and mm-hmm. fake it till you make it.
Sure.
There's none of that when it comes to Mandarin. Like mm-hmm. you either know what you're saying or you don't. And so that was weird. Even the food was different. The way that they dine was different. So all of these things come into the definition of culture shock, which I think is, you know, the gateway to exposure. And after you have that culture shock, that always stays with you mm-hmm. after you go on a trip someplace. Mm-hmm. And it causes you to look at the way that you do things wherever you're from mm-hmm. and say, they do this differently from me, or I do this differently from them. And then if you get too in-depth, you start asking the whys. Like, mm-hmm. why is it that they do this? Why mm-hmm. is it that they do that? And that's where the real, I think, conscious expansion comes from, that which is, I think, the biggest benefit of exposure.
You know? And it, you know, again, it just broadens your perspective on how things can be done, the different things that are being done, and how you could possibly incorporate that into the things that you do when you go back home or where you know, wherever it is that you end up. I'll just run down a couple more of the points. So next is self-discovery, right? It helps you to step out of your comfort zone and kind of reveals the hidden strengths and talents that you have, right? The next is travel helps you to problem solve, builds your problem solving skills. I can't tell you the amount of times that I have run into, delays, taking the wrong turn, being late for a flight, late to an event or engagement that caused me to miss something else. Like, and you got to really think on the fly and be like, all right, how can I develop a think on my feet mentality, right? And I think travel really helped me to do that, because, you know, I'm now a person who, like, I don't get rattled too quickly, right? I'm able to really compose myself, think about, okay, what's going on, and how can I adapt or adjust the things that's happening to me. It builds our cognitive growth, or allows us, assist us with our cognitive growth, helps our social skills. Obviously, meeting a lot of new people, you put in these maybe uncomfortable situations where you have to stretch, especially someone like myself who is introverted. I got to stretch myself a little bit in conversing and, you know, expanding myself socially. It helps with personal reflection. And this is one of my most favorite reasons to travel, right? I get a lot of personal time, a lot of time to reflect, to think, especially on flights, right? On long flights. I have a greater appreciation for God, right? You look out the window and you just see the amazement or the amazing views. And you know, I don't know if you've ever, I'm sure you have, seen a sunset from the sky. Bro, there is nothing like it. Like it is
indescribable.
It's a unique experience to see. And, you know, it just shows the amazingness of God and his creation, man. So from, you know, the points that I kind of just went down, I just want to kind of run down again and get your perspective, because again, the focus of what we're discussing is how travel can help us shape our identities and build us as individuals. You know, I mentioned problem solving skills, and I think, you know, that's one all of us can relate to. So how do you view travel in assisting with developing problem solving skills?
I've got to tell you a story. Like with every question you ask, I promise I have a story for it. The first time my now wife and I went to South Africa, we booked a safari that was in a village that was maybe 5.5 hours drive from Johannesburg. I'm one of those people. Are you a planner when you travel, or you're a go with the flow kind of person?
I kind of go.
Just go with it. Okay, I'm the exact opposite. I kind of like to have a rough plan, just so that I know. All right, I have to go from point A to point B. This is what I need to do. So, I had this mapped out. We were to fly from London. We would have had a day ahead of time when we arrived, so we could book the car, get out, do what we have to do in the city, and then head to the. It's called Crocodile Bridge Safari Camp. Mm-hmm. So head to the safari camp. Oh, boy. Got to the airport.
Oh man.
Couldn't get on the flight.
Wow.
Had to get on the flight. My passport got stolen, so I had to get an emergency travel document. That's why I couldn't get on the flight. Mm-hmm. Had to go get that sorted out, go back to the airport the next day. We ended up landing in Johannesburg with about 6 hours to spare. Now I say to spare because at the safari camps, they close the gates at a certain time because you don't want people coming in poaching and this and that and the next. So we have 6 hours to make a 5.5 hour drive, right? That in and of itself isn't really the problem that I had to solve. Mm-hmm. And there's a big learning curve in here too. The only car that was available when we landed was standard shift. And at the time could not drive stick. No exaggeration.
Yo.
So, you know, I'm trying to be macho about it. Like my wife doesn't know I can't drive stick.
I got it.
So I'm just like, yeah, I got it. Let's go. You know, whatever. Pick up the keys, jump in the car. I know enough to know you sink the clutch to start the car.
Yeah.
So I put the clutch down, I started the car, put it in reverse, and then I pressed the gas and let the clutch go completely, and I stalled in the parking lot.
Immediately.
That happened to me about 12 times between the airport and the highway. It was embarrassing. Like I'm here making excuses like, no, it's the car, I promise. Or like, it's supposed to do that, you know what I mean?
Oh,
so we have to do this long drive. I can't drive stick shift. She had to get her phone out, go on YouTube. I had to swallow my pride. I had to look up a little like standard shift tutorial. Whoa. I had to learn that on the fly. And this is on the fly as in we are moving because we have to get there before the gates of this place close.
So you try to learn as quickly as you can.
As quickly as I can. Whoa. Man, I got cursed out by taxi drivers. There were people going around me looking at me like, what are you doing? Like it was terrible. So problem solving skills.
That is a first. I have never heard someone learn in the moment how to drive standard shift.
Baptism by fire.
Are you able to drive it very like
proficiently?
Got you.
Proficient.
Got you. Man, that's dope. But you know, and you know, you said you lost your passport. Like if you're an avid traveler, are you an avid traveler if you haven't lost your passport at least once?
Nah, I think that's a part of the eligibility criteria.
Like that's almost like the tax you got to pay to get in.
Yeah.
Boy, I remember the first I lost my passport twice. The first time really wasn't my fault. I still just blame my mother for this, right? Because they were visiting us in school, and I was super tired. This was like, you know, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was super tired that evening. They was dropping us back to the dorms, and she had this envelope with all of my documents in it. I can't remember why she had it, but she had it and she gave it to me. I specifically said, cause I know myself, it's one thing when you know yourself, right? And you tell, I'm like, mommy, I think you should hold this for me. I could get this from you in the morning. She was like, you go in right from the car to your dorm room, you should be fine.
What could go wrong?
I've never seen that passport again. I honestly can't tell you what happened. And literally it was less than a minute walk. But I don't know what happened between the car and my dorm room. Woke up the next day, couldn't find my passport. Needless to say, I was like, all right, I can't. No, I actually blame my mother. It's like, see, you should have listened to me. You should have taken my passport or whatever. The second time I lost my passport was, I was walking on a flight. Usually I take my passport once I get in the plane, put it in my backpack. For some reason this time, I put it in the back pocket of the seat in the front of me.
That's your first mistake.
Bro. Flight landed, was walking to baggage claim. And you know, when you walk and you just make sure I have everything. Didn't feel my passport in my pocket. It's okay, let me check my bag. Passport wasn't in my bag. You know that like adrenaline rush you get immediately where your body just like shock? I was like, oh my goodness, I didn't leave my passport. So I try to run back to the gate. They telling me, oh, you can't get back on the plane. Matter of fact, your plane about to take off or whatever. So the flight, I landed in Miami, Florida, and the flight was going to like Charlotte or something like that. So in my mind, I'm already processing, all right, okay, how am I going to get this passport back or get a travel document, you know, so I could travel? And I was on a fellas trip. So, and that was the start of our trip. So
trip.
I already dampened the mood because everyone trying to make sure, you know, everything's straight or whatever. Needless to say, everything got worked out. They, you know, my passport was sent back to Miami and I was able to pick it up. But definitely, you know, I think in travel, it really helps you to learn about yourself. Like I learned, like when I get on the plane, throw my passport in my backpack. Always be aware of where my passport is. If I leave or lose anything, it won't be my passport or my wallet.
Nah, man. The life hack is to give your passport to your wife.
See, my wife, that's good. That may be good for you. But my wife, just as bad as me.
Oh, no.
So we both would be, we'd be liable to lose each other's stuff. So we'd be like, look, you take care of your stuff. I take care of mine. And that's kind of how we do it. Nah, but definitely, I think with problem solving and even, you know, you had to learn on the fly how to drive a manual car or drive a standard shift car. But I'm sure there are a lot of us who have had these similar situations or maybe even worse situations where you were forced to learn something or do something on the fly to immediately solve a problem. The next is the cognitive growth that we experience, right? So when we travel, our brains are stimulated and it forces our creativity and critical thinking that we need to adapt, right? And cognitive growth is something that I feel like we're always doing, right? We're always growing in that aspect of our personal lives. Any examples, any stories where you had to use your the skills or the information, the education that you had to, you know, maybe solve a problem in a situation or adapt in a situation where you wouldn't have readily done so had you not had that experience?
I don't know if I've ever had that specific experience. I think creativity, critical thinking, and adaptability for me flow more outwardly, mm-hmm. In the sense that my creative cooking, for example, and FYI, no, not to be disingenuous to chefs, but executive chef just means the person that creates the menu. I can also do the cooking, but I don't want Bobby Flay to listen to this and get offended.
But you have to know what you're cooking to design a menu.
Yeah, exactly. How
to put flavors together and stuff like that.
So that's where that came from in terms of cognitive growth, creativity, et cetera, et cetera. I spent about a year and a half in my 20s sort of just traveling around, literally just trying food. I'd go to every market I could find, whatever it was, however weird it looked, however normal it looked, I just try it for the sake of it. Found a lot of things I liked, a lot of things I didn't. Yeah. Some things I'd probably never eat again. But what that did was it expanded my palate beyond our sort of traditional Bahamian tomatoes, onions, blah, 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 stew down your herbs, cook your rice type of thing. Yep. And so I tried to bring that back, because the thing is always to, you know, use the knowledge, don't bury it, but try to use it. So I bring that back into the things that I cook, into a lot of the recipes that I use. And I parlayed it into a few events, featuring some like South African dishes that they make, or some Chinese dishes and things like that. So I think it came back in that way, in its expansive power.
So I, you know, the creativity that I was able to attain through my travel really comes from the experiences that I do and the things that I try. Are you an individual who, have you always been someone who tries, like, you know, different foods, even if it looks bad or it seemingly wouldn't taste good? Are you the type of person to try it?
100%. I am always that guy.
And I think I am the same way. And the way I got like that was through my dad. My dad traveled a lot, and, you know, I had the opportunity to travel with him, you know, whenever I wasn't in school or whatever. And he tried everything. When I tell you, like, I don't care how it look, how it smell, he's going to try it. And he always pushed my sister and I to try things. Now, I kind of took that to heart, and I'm glad that he pushed that on me, because there are a lot of things that I like today that I probably wouldn't have liked if I wasn't the type of person just to try things for the first time. Like my wife, for example, she is not a trier. She's the type of person who, if she goes to this restaurant and she orders a particular meal, she'll order that meal every time she goes to the restaurant. Like, doesn't matter. And I'm like, bro, you got to try something different. Try something new. How are you going to know, like, what you like from what you don't like if you just don't try things? So a lot of things that she likes now, today, is because, you know, she's with me and I was able to upgrade her and assist her in expanding her palate. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, experiencing these different cultures and moving around the world, and being able to just try different things, try these different experiences, I think is something that if you're able and capable of doing, you should. You know, one of the things my wife and I have recently started doing is when we travel to take cooking classes.
I saw y'all did one of those in Paris or something.
We did,
right?
Yeah, we did it in Paris this past New Year's, and that was fun. And I like it because you learn. I love to cook. So I incorporate a lot of the techniques that I learn in these classes at home. And I'm able to, you know, just kind of explore and toy with these different ideas of, like, what works, what doesn't work, what matches with what I like versus what I may not like, but how I could maybe adjust it so that I can like it a bit more. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. I just think that these different experiences and the willingness to try can assist us in just broadening our perspective in our personal development. Social skills. Are you introverted, extroverted person?
Not in the slightest. I'm cool. We could, I'll chat with anybody. One of my favorite things to do is talk to strangers. Like, it's,
man, I truly envy people like y'all, bro. The ability to just hold the conversation and enjoy it.
Well, it's because, I mean, look at your platform, for example. When you talk to people, you learn things. You know, that's the simplest form of human communication.
Yeah, but you've always been like that. This is fairly new for me.
You know? Fair point. Nah, anybody that knows me will tell you, like, you get me going, I won't shut up. Like,
social butterfly.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk to anybody, because you always get a little tidbit of something. Sometimes people tell you really wild things, but, you know, it's always good to have a conversation, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then just personal reflection. So is there, I want to ask a few questions now, right? Because you're an avid traveler. You've been quite a number of places, had a number of experiences. So I want to know, first question is, what is your most favorite place to travel to?
Tough one. It's a tie. London and Cape Town.
London.
Love London. Wow. Lived there for a bit, studied there. Like, I know that place almost better than I know now. So,
and even because I know, you know, London has this stigma of, you know, always being rainy and not much sunshine.
It's not a stigma. I think it's kind of a fact. Yeah, the sky is pretty gloomy a lot of the time. Right. You do get a fair amount of rain, but what Bahamians say, rain no stop, no show, man.
Gotcha.
You just
got
to take the city as you find it.
Gotcha,
you know?
Gotcha.
You can't control the weather, but you could control where you are when it's raining, right?
And why South Africa?
I had probably the most eye-opening trip of my life. Like, I think we go through periods when we're growing up from 20s into our 30s that you're sort of on a path of self-discovery, mm-hmm. right? And it was the first time I think I'd ever hung out with a group of people who were all so open-minded. Everybody just seemed really free, really comfortable with who they were. Mm-hmm. And like they knew themselves better than sort of I knew myself at mm-hmm. the time. So it gave me sort of a goal to shoot for, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So after that, I mean, I ended up going back again and I made some really, really good friends there. And mm-hmm. I've sort of been going back, or I should say we sort of been going back every year, year and a half ever since.
Yeah, man. So South Africa is probably one of my most favorite countries to travel to. I try to get to South Africa as often as I can. Usually is, you know, once at least once a year. But just the culture there and the diversity that you're able to experience, right? Because you could, if you want to experience like the village, historically, you know, traditional African village, like you're able to do it. If you want to experience metropolitan city-like environment, South Africa has it. If you want to experience a coastal, you know, breezy, it's almost tropical environment, like South Africa just has so much to offer. And you know, I learn so much and enjoy my time every time that I'm there, especially with the friends that I've been able to build over the years. Second question, what's your least most favorite place that you've traveled to, and what was your experience there?
I don't know if I have a least favorite place.
Really?
Yeah. I haven't been anywhere that I think was particularly bad. There were some experiences that were just like, all right, this was cool, but I don't know if I would rush to do it again. So like Budapest, for example. Mm-hmm. Budapest is a cool city, but it is what it is. It's a city divided by two bridges. You have all this domineering post-Soviet Union or pre-Soviet Union architecture about mm-hmm. the place. Good food, good beers. We stayed at a nice hotel, very famous sort of place. But I wouldn't do it again.
You know? Why wouldn't you do it again?
It was just kind of drab. I mean, there's really not much going on. Maybe because we were there for such a short time, maybe mm-hmm. we didn't overexpose ourselves to everything that we could have done. But it was one of those destinations where after you did the big bus city tour and saw the market and all the statues and the Hungarian baths and all that stuff,
it's just nothing else to see.
That's it, you know what I mean?
I'm kind of nervous to say what that place is. I mean, I don't want to offend anyone out there, right? But Congo, bro. I went to Congo. I got sick. Something that I ate or something. I have never been that sick while traveling. That was the first and last time I've ever been sick. So it just dampened my experience, man. And then, you know, Congo is like, if you think the Bahamas is like relaxed and slow in the way that we move and do things, Congo is, they might have us beat. They take their time with everything. And, you know, it's no knock to them, right? That's just the culture. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, something that I grew to love. But that bug, that stomach bug that I get, man, that was rough, bro. That was absolutely rough. And that also taught me a lesson in travel, how to eat and what not to eat.
I got one for you.
When not to eat certain things. Because before that, you know, it also taught me that South Africa is much different than other African countries, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like night and day. I knew that, but I didn't internalize it until that experience in Congo. And boy, I guess I won't say I wouldn't go back to Congo, but you know, if I don't have a reason to go,
you wouldn't make the trip.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't make
that
trip.
That gave you another rite of passage that you get if you don't get food poisoning once on vacation.
I hate it.
Did you really travel?
I absolutely hate it, bro.
Same here. Like, bro, I got food poisoning in Hong Kong 2 days before I had to take a 16-hour flight.
Oh my god,
that was the worst.
Whoa,
that was the worst. Oh, absolute man. Worst. Like, I had to sit there the whole flight. I kept asking the flight attendant, just please bring me some tea. I'm like in my whole Bahamian bag. Bring me some lemon tea. I'm going to sit here and drink this tea. My stomach will be fine. Meanwhile, I am two steps from keeling over on this plane, bro. Like, it was so bad.
How do you like the long flight? Speaking of 16-hour flight, the first time you took the flight, how was it compared to like now?
Mm, It was cool. I mean, the first time I did it was actually to mainland China. I did that New Jersey to Beijing.
Oh, wow.
16 hours, give or take. It was chilled, you know, you stretch out a little bit and just make sure you eat a lot, stay mm-hmm. hydrated and mm-hmm. sleep it off.
Walk around, get up and walk around for sure.
Yeah, stretch and all of that kind yeah. of stuff. But I kind of live for long flights. Like my travel bucket list is pretty specific. Like I want to do that 19-hour flight from Sydney to Argentina or wherever it goes. Yeah,
if you can do 16, you can do 19.
You say that, but there's a big difference between 12 and 16 and a big difference between 16. That's a long time to be on a plane, 16
to 17. I feel like if you could do that 19, it's two more hours.
Right. They call that a double sunrise service because you leave when the sun is coming up in one place and you land when it's coming up somewhere else. Yep. Think about that. That's a long time to be in the air, man.
I love it, though. I love those long flights, man. I get a lot of work done, catch up on some movies, get a lot of sleep done. You could do so much on those long flights. So I live for them.
Yeah, same.
Next question. So what's the most memorable experience you had throughout your travels? I know it may be hard to pick one, but just try to narrow it down to like the one experience that, man, you look at that and be like, yo, that was an amazing experience.
New Year's in Cape Town.
That's on my bucket list.
That was a time. You know, my wife's going to listen to this. Like, baby, we had some great experiences too. You know, not knocking it. This was before we got married. But I spent that New Year's with a couple of my good friends who I studied in Beijing with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's nothing remarkable if you listen to the story. It's like it was just a bunch of people who we did a wine tasting that day. And mm-hmm. then we had this really nice loft with a hot tub in it and had like a house party. It was sort of the vibe mm-hmm. of it that made it all memorable. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was just the energy of it, the sort of camaraderie that for me is sort of up there. Then, I would probably say the safari that my wife and I did in the same one where I had to learn to drive stick shift.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was a good time. Again, the vibes, like at the end of the chaos, you know, we're out seeing all these animals. It's good to be one with nature.
Got
you know
you,
what I'm saying?
Got you.
So that was a really, really good vibe too.
No, I could relate. I think for me, definitely experiencing safaris and game drives every time I go to the continent of Africa. But in particular, I did this thing where I walked with lions. And I don't know if you've ever experienced walking with lions, but when like, so you leading up to it, you know you're about to do it. And it's like, all right, cool. Like this should be fun. And then you there and you see like these three lions just like here, right next to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you ask yourself like, bro, does this make sense?
Yeah.
Like if this lion decides to be a lion, like.
There's nothing you could do about
absolutely
it.
Absolutely nothing. You know what I mean? And is that, you know, so just experiences like that, man, just being able to say, man, I lived that and did that. You know, I think that was one of the highlights for me throughout my travels. One thing I want to touch on is the broadening of perspectives. You know, I tell people a lot of the time, like I can tell you about a place that I've been, but I prefer you to go to experience it for yourself, right? Because there are so much biases and misinformation that we get about places that we travel to, right? Like I can remember, you know, we traveled to Israel quite a bit, and I've done many trips to Israel. I think I've been to Israel maybe over 20 times at this point.
Wow.
And I have conversation with people who have never been, and I, you know, try to invite them to these trips, and they're like, nah, I don't want to go to Israel. It's too dangerous over there, you know. And obviously now is a little different, right? There's like, right?
Not the ideal time.
Yeah, it's definitely not the time to go to Israel. But in the past,
tickets,
you know,
probably cheap.
Absolutely. But in the past, you know, it's you know, they've had their issues, you know, within the country. But once you're there, like you get to have a better understanding of, man, this isn't anything like the news portrays it, right? And this past summer, last year, in the summer, my wife and I went to Dubai. And, you know, she had this perspective. I'm always open to going to these places and wanted to go to Dubai from a while back. And she was just closed-minded to it. But I had a friend that was going. We had a great opportunity to go. One of our trips actually fell through, and that created the opportunity for us to go. And in going, you know, you realize like, man, this country isn't anything like, you know, we hear about it. What's been one of those things that's, you know, you had a perspective or a bias before you went, and then once you went, your perspective totally changed?
Literally everywhere, but the biggest one was probably China. A lot of people have a peculiar perspective of what Chinese people do, how they are, what their culture is like. Mm. I think that's best explained probably through food. So if you go to any Chinese restaurant in Nassau, aside from, you know, your Shuang Bars or your East Villas, sure, you order something like sweet and sour chicken. You know, you get those battered pieces of chicken. Ostensibly chicken.
Yeah. So they say.
So they say. You know, you get those battered pieces of chicken, some kind of greasy fried rice, mm, that kind of thing. But in Beijing, I kind of discovered that Chinese people don't really eat that stuff. Like, sure, that's the exported version.
Sure.
That's sort of palatable for Westerners. Mm-hmm. Every restaurant that we went into, they bring you like a wok on the table with a little sterno looking thing underneath it so you can heat it up. Mm-hmm. And they make things fresh. I mean, everything from fresh cilantro, the eggs come from chickens that just laid them 2 days ago.
Sure.
And the flavors and sort of the variety of Chinese food, it's done no justice outside of China.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a few stereotypes. I mean, I heard a photographer once say that, you know, stereotypes are fun because they exist. It's like, sure, Mexicans wear sombreros. You know, that's a stereotype, but sure, it exists, right? So all of the stereotypes of Chinese people, I think they kind of get a bad rap for being more isolated than they actually are.
Mm.
But in fact, I think they're a very curious people because they've been closed up for so long. They're not really exposed to much. Mm-hmm. So have you ever been to China?
No.
Okay. If and when you and your wife make it to China, mm-hmm, I want you to go to Tiananmen Square and just walk around. I promise you, some Chinese people are going to walk up to
I've
you
heard the experience.
And they're just going to take photos.
No,
with
I've
you.
Heard that experience.
Just,
yeah,
just because like, it's not like, oh my God, it's a black man. It's like, oh my God, it's a black man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What is this? Am I seeing a unicorn?
Is
like,
that,
it's crazy.
Is that awkward though?
Was it's awkward the first time. Time, yeah. Gotcha. It was awkward the first time. A guy literally just walked up and put his hand around my waist and took a selfie with me and just kind of mumbled something in Chinese and walked off. And I was just like,
"You get violated, bro."
Yeah, bro. Like that was weird. Like, why are you taking selfies, bro? Like, you sending the feds for me? Like, what? You know what I mean? That was weird, man.
Oh man.
But yeah, you get used to it. But I think that would be the most perspective broadening experience.
Got
yeah.
you. Well, I want to pivot a bit, right? So we talk about our personal travels and our experiences in it, right? But for someone that may want to travel but may not have the means to, or may not have the means to do it the way that they envision it in their mind, what are some tips that you would recommend or give to someone maybe first starting out, you know, a plan or a structure that they can put in place to, you know, start small and then expand their experiences with travel?
Yeah, so I would say there's a lot of travel-based resources available online, mm-hmm, now. I would say do your research and start with those resources. So for example, the price of plane tickets has increased, you know, dramatically over, mm-hmm, the last couple of years. There are websites like Airfordable where you can basically put a plane ticket on layaway. So, mm-hmm, you can plan your trip 10 months in advance, you pay a deposit, and then every 4 months they deduct something from your bank account, blah, mm-hmm, blah, blah, and then they release your ticket once it's paid off.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you some time so that you don't have to bog yourself down with the burden of paying for this, paying for that, paying for that.
Sure.
I think you have to be a little more willing to not follow the crowd. Everybody, mm-hmm, likes to sort of do the whole, I'm flying on British Airways or Qatar Airways. Start where you can start, mm-hmm, you know. Don't burden yourself down with too many expenses off the rip. There are airlines like Norse Airlines. You can fly premium economy, 2 people, $3,000 round trip to London from Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So there's many, many ways you can even make luxury travel affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Try to look at what locals do domestically in the destination that you're going to, because that's always a good indicator of not only the best places to go, mm-hmm, or the most native places to go, but locals themselves are not going to necessarily be trying to blow a bag if you're on a budget, you know what I mean?
Sure.
They know this is the home spot.
What's a good way to do that if you don't know any locals?
You got to use your social media muscles. I think.
Just about to say, they got a bunch of people that go to these places and do like YouTube reviews.
Yeah,
my wife and I, we do that all the time. Like, we look at these YouTube, the YouTubers and their experiences in these different places, and we kind of like watch a lot of them to get a good sense of like what to do, what not to do. I think that's something.
Same. Those are always useful tools because, I mean, you have somebody that did the trip before, mm-hmm, that could tell you, you know, do's, don'ts, mm-hmm, try this, don't try that, blah, blah, blah. And it gives you a more informed itinerary.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, those are always very useful tools. And I think group trips. Group trips are a really, really great way to get to a faraway destination and break the cost down. Now, I see you making the face. They don't usually get out of the group chat. That's the problem. Right? Somebody always has the idea, my boys, but there's no execution.
All my boys would know. We plan a group trip 4 months, 6 months out. Everybody, yeah, bro, we go and we good.
Mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
month out.
Yeah, but I got something to do. Yeah. Oh, we still going? Oh, my bad, but I can't make it no more. I understand fully.
Oh, man.
And so that one requires some work. But group trips are a really good way to get out there. You know, it doesn't give you a break on your cost for airfare because the ticket is a ticket. Mm-hmm. But, you know, five people staying in a 6-bedroom, 7-bedroom Airbnb is better than you staying in one hotel by yourself. Mm-hmm. It just makes experiences more affordable. Mm-hmm. That's usually people's biggest hang up with travel. Sure. It can get expensive, but it doesn't have to be.
Sure. So let's pivot to the Bahamas, right? So I'll be honest. I have within the past, I'd say 10 years, I've just started traveling around the islands in the Bahamas. I wasn't big on, I don't really like, I'm not an island boy. I like the city life. I much rather the city life. Bahamas too hot, man. I prefer, you know, just give me some cool weather where I could, you know, dress up a little bit. You know what I mean? So I just prefer the city life. But over the last 10 years, I've been venturing to our outer islands here in the Bahamas. And I must say, it's been a great experience. I haven't had a bad experience in any of the islands that I've visited. And I know you say you are a proprietor in one of the, I think the airlines or the charter companies.
No, it's an app actually. Oh. So think of like Uber, for example, but for booking the charter flight.
Okay. Yeah. What's the name of that?
Flymingo.
Flymingo.
Yeah. All right. App Store, Google Play, it's available.
And
download it.
And so you just book, kind of say where you want to you know, leave from, where you want to go, and it tells you.
Yeah, you open it up. It has a drop down menu. So if you're in Nassau, for example, you choose Odyssey or Jet Aviation because, you know, FBOs, we don't deal with the LPIA. We don't deal with the commercial airport. And you choose your destination. A pilot sends you a price for a flight. If you like it, you accept it, you link it up. It's all digital, so you can pay by card and all of that. Mm-hmm. And you just show up at the airport and hop on your flight.
Now, is this just for inter-island travel? Like, is it for
inter-island travel? And then we have operations that go from Nassau to Florida, round trip, but nowhere beyond that at this point.
Got
but
you.
I mean, if you're flying private, you can book a pilot in Nassau to take you wherever you really
sure, want. Sure, sure. What's been the response?
So far, so good. We've gotten a lot of feedback on things like the availability of flights to popular destinations. Mm-hmm. So there are always a great number of requests for North Eleuthera, mm-hmm. Marsh Harbor. Those are two of the more popular ones. Mm-hmm. So far, so good. It's been slow on the uptick because pilots are obviously very busy people.
Gotcha.
And you really kind of have to be over most of their shoulder. Like, hey, did you sign up for the app yet? Hey, did you sign up for the app yet? Which, you know, it's just a problem when you have a startup.
Yeah.
It's growing smoothly.
Pricing. How have the customers expressed their appreciation or dislike with the pricing? How is pricing?
We haven't gotten any negative feedback as far as the pricing is concerned.
Okay.
And I think that's because our strategy really involves the pilot sort of setting a price, mm-hmm. and then the passenger is free to accept or reject that. They can make a counter bid and say, well, you know, if it's $2,300, let me give you $21, something like that.
Okay.
So they can say what they want to pay. And there may be somebody that can fit within that budget that can work for them.
Okay. All right. So Flymingo, guys, if you're in the Bahamas or visiting the Bahamas and want to go to the Outer Islands, that's an opportunity for you to take advantage of that offering by Nick and his team.
For sure.
Shameless plug. Nah, man, that's dope. That's dope. I'm always, you know, since I've started traveling to the Outer Islands, I always try to encourage locals, you know, Bahamians and non-Bahamians who visit to travel to the islands. What is your preference? Do you prefer inter-island travel, or do you prefer like islands, or are you more of a big city guy like myself?
I'm a city guy, but I found great value in going to the islands.
Mm-hmm.
And so in between big city trips, we always make an island mission.
Got you.
Yeah.
Got you. What's your favorite island to travel to?
Hands down, Eleuthera.
Really?
Yeah. Hands down.
What's maybe a good experience in Luther, or a good recommendation of an experience in Luther?
Well, it really depends what you're looking for. I mean, I always tell people the best way to experience Luther is to probably spend the weekend. Go on a Friday, come back on a Sunday evening or a Monday morning. I think what you want to do is start in Governor's Harbor. There's a lot of nice resorts. You got like French Leave, which is beautiful if you're looking for romantic views and pretty sunsets and all that. And then there's some smaller places, a lot of Airbnbs scattered about the place. So, you know, book yourself a spot, and you have to be open-minded when you go to the islands, because you're not going to find the same amenities in every island as you do in Nassau. And I mean, certainly you won't find the same amenities in every island as you will in the other. So be a little bit open-minded, because you'll find more often that there's not as much to do, but that's the exact reason that you want to be there.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I've recently, not always, developed this view that I think we market tourism to Bahamians wrong, because people don't know what to do on the islands. They know when to go if it's for a regatta, for a homecoming, something like that. But if we really pushed the fact that going to the islands is an alternative to going to other places for the sake of wellness, you know, mental health is a big thing. Sometimes that tranquility and that slowdown, that is invaluable.
I think that's one of the reasons I love traveling to the outer islands. Like when I don't need to like do stuff, like I'm not trying to, you know, go to a big city and like do a lot of things, a lot of events or whatever. Going to the family islands, like, you really get that tranquil experience. Like you able to relax, go on the beach, sit out in the sun. And then the customer service on these various islands and the people that live there, it's a much different experience than, say, in Nassau.
Absolutely.
Entirely different. And it's just more, you know, family oriented. They're a little more welcoming, in my opinion, than Nassau. So I entirely agree with you. If you're looking for, you know, especially if you're trying to take a mental break, Family Island, one of the outer islands in the Bahamas, would definitely be an option.
You can't beat it. I mean, you have people that spend thousands of dollars to come from around the world to go to places like Mayaguana,
bro,
where there is nothing to do.
Bro, people that spend millions of dollars to go to San Salvador. And I used to be like, wait, ain't nothing to do there, bro.
But it's beautiful,
like,
though.
I went, bro, San Salvador is one of the most beautiful islands in the Bahamas. Like the beaches, like the shoreline, like it's like, bro, this... And it's like, you wouldn't know unless you actually go and experience these places. And that's why I try to encourage people like to go to these different outer islands, because, you know, you don't want foreigners coming and enjoying the things that are in our backyards.
Exactly.
Right? And every opportunity that we get, I think we should take advantage of it. So last thing, I want to kind of segue back into just wrapping up the idea of travel being, a good source or a good way to shape our identity and build our personal mind. What would be your recommendation? To someone who, you know, doesn't see the need to travel, or, you know, may not have a desire to travel at this time. How would you encourage them to say, yo, I think this could be one of the things that assist you in building or being able to build your personal mind?
I think I would challenge anybody who feels that way, which is a disturbing thought to me in its entirety, but I would challenge anybody that feels that way to really think hard about what their perspective is and to ask themselves, is there anybody else that thinks differently from me? That answer is going to be somewhere else. It's a great way to challenge your mind. Other than that, I would say monotony is not something that is enjoyable. Nobody likes to do the same thing over and over. So if for no other reason, travel to break the cycle. Once you break that cycle and you realize, like, wow, life has so many different experiences to offer if I just jump on a plane and go somewhere that's not home. I think it's almost immediately addictive, because you can't go back. You know what I mean?
It's like they say, it's like getting a tattoo, right? You get your first one and you get that itch. I personally, it hurt too much.
How many did you get?
Four.
You were four?
Yeah.
I think I'm up to 19 now.
I got one on my right arm. Bro, I was like, well, I don't know if I can do this again.
Nah, I think the most,
But no, I think definitely once you get bit by the travel bug once, you're always eager to jump on any opportunity that you get to travel. And I encourage anyone out there, you know, just travel. Just if at least just for the experience, right? I think if you start with just, I want to experience something new, you're going to open the floodgates to a lot of things that you wouldn't even realize you would gain through travel. So I just want to encourage you to do that. All right, next, so last question. This is a question, has nothing to do with travel. This is a question I just ask all of my guests on the pod just to get their perspective on it. And that question is, how do you define success?
I define success as freedom. I feel if you have the ability to act, you know, in a manner that suits your personality, if you can do things for others, if you can live a fulfilled life, if you can find a way to maintain your health and all of that sort of good stuff, mm-hmm. then you're succeeding. Mm-hmm. You can measure it in dollars and cents if you want, but that's just one metric, you know what I mean?
Sure.
I think success really comes in the intangible things in life being established and balanced, mm-hmm. and then the reward of that success is the tangible things and the freedom that comes.
Got you. Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense. Well, that brings us to the segment of the pod where I leave with you a milestone. The milestone today is very simple, right? Travel leaves you speechless and then turns you into a storyteller. Yo, I encourage every and anyone out there, if you get the opportunity, please take advantage of any opportunities you have for travel. It broadens your perspective. It helps you to be exposed to different things. It builds your personal mind, and it gives you a story to tell, right? You're able to go back, and years from now, you're going to be saying, man, I remember 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, this was my experience. This was a great experience that I had. This is a bad experience that I had, and I could sit there and laugh about it because I had the experience, all right? So let's all become storytellers in our old lives,
amen.
All right? Well, that brings us to the end of this pod. Nick, man, thank you for coming on. We got to do this again. I really enjoyed this conversation. And we could talk about something a little more specific next time. I know you're working on something. And, you know, I'm eager to learn more about it because, you know, it deals with travel. And I think it'll be able to allow a lot of people opportunities to get bitten by the travel bug.
Yeah, I mean, we have to run the segment back for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe what we'll do is I'll invite you on a Flamingo flight. We could record from one of the islands one day.
We need
to get you out so you could see some things.
I like that idea. I can take advantage of that. All right, that brings us to the end of the pod. Man, as always, the goal of this pod is to entertain, educate, and elevate you miles high above your fears, your doubts, and any limitations that you may think exist. Always knowing that those limitations only exist in your mind. All right, so until next time, you guys stay blessed.